And now they're back to this constant grey sky thing, almost constant, because there's occasional day that isn't totally dark. But most of them are, so far, or have been, and it's pretty unpleasant. And the amount of rain I'm getting too is rather unpleasant, but the mosquitoes love it. You can hear them outside the windows in a chorus, just to see they're taking over. You see they're getting very cocky again. And bites galore, of course, if you dare go outside. And when you shut a door outside, you close it behind you. Just the waft of it brings millions in with you. That's a problem. And so you've got the pleasure of meeting them one by one for the next few hours, or maybe all night long. Even in bed, you wake up and your neck's all bitten with these mosquitoes, and you hear that zing, it just wakes you up. It must be a primordial memory or something. You've got this memory of the zzzz from the caveman, right? And it wakes you up immediately. I think that's really what encouraged the caveman to put a door in his cave eventually, that became a house. And of course, real estate started to flourish, and now we can't afford the houses anymore, going back to the caves. But that's the state of things as we so-called progress along this progressive plan system. What gets me to today is we've moved another chapter into the progressive system, a plan system, where media, started going back a few years, mind you, took a big dive. It was already a dive anyway, a lot of the media just with opinions and the reporters giving nasty commentaries about different people or whatever it happened to be. But the thing is, eventually they had the Leveson Inquiry in Britain, and they had the one in Australia and other Commonwealth countries, this in tandem, and they came out with new laws and restrictions on media. And so you don't get really much investigation at all into reporting. It's all safe reporting today means simply republishing the handouts that government and top agencies give you. That's what they do, and that's how they get their money. And that's authorised stuff, you see, and it's safe. There's nothing in it to cause offence, they think. But as far as anything of any with any grit in it at all, it's pretty well taboo. You can still slag politicians, because that's what they're there for, because they're not really making the real major decisions on top. But you'll notice we're in a kind of limbo, because since the Leveson Inquiry, pretty well all the news you're getting is just straight handouts from government departments, even through PR companies for governments, in fact, in different agencies too. And lots of the health things that they hand out too are simply ads for this and ads for that. And the rest of it is photographs, like the Daily Mail, so stacks of photographs, to try and trap you and make you go ooh-ah, for hours on end. And that's fair enough, and if they want to, because they have to make their money somehow. But what happens to the stars, the so-called stars, actors and actresses, etc., or models or whatever happens, that's not news. That really isn't news. News is supposed to be to do with things that affect all of us, you see. That's what it always was before. And news at one point, like the Fourth Estate, was to inform the public, like a medium between government and agencies and authority and the general public. That was supposedly what they gave themselves, the kind of title. But of course it was a con then too, because they all did the right things, and they're all looking for, in Britain especially, they were looking for their knighthoods, etc., which is a big thing today. There's more folk from the Labour Party seeking knighthoods over the years, according to some articles out there. It's quite astonishing, really. Or is it really? Is it really? And the grovel, as soon as they see that possibility of a knighthood. But that's the system in which we live today. You don't really get, you get declarations from governments. Now, Britain's been awfully good at that, with declarations, even during all the real heavy socialist era, where it's more obvious when Harold Wilson was in. And you could tune into BBC radio and listen to the Department of so-and-so and the Minister of Agriculture has declared blah, 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 and the Minister of Fisheries has declared blah, blah, blah. And they can tune into Radio Moscow, and you get this exact same format in English, because they had an English version. Exact, and you swear it's all coming from the same place. But mind you, after the so-called abandonment of the Soviet Union, you found so many of the radio hosts in Russia had been trained and enabled by the BBC, which again puts above a farce and a lot of the agenda that we're given. But today, they're back on the same roll again. There's occasional declaration here and there, but you have to really search for it. They're not going to hand it out to you happily, because they don't want you involved in anything. Remember, a democracy is supposed to be informed consent for the public to accept anything. So it's a nice joke, I know that, but it's, you know, the intentions are there, I suppose. You know, they're nice intentions, but it sounds nice. But in reality, they don't want public inputs when there's some laws coming up or something to be debated in government, because then you get immediately, hopefully, you know, more so in the US, of course, the citizens' organizations immediately wanting some inputs and at least some output from what they're up to. That way you could stop, hopefully, or sway something or alter something that's going to get put upon people. But nowadays, you only find out about things that have happened often after the fact. They don't want your input, therefore they don't tell you. And they've been training the public, I've said this for years, to sit back and allow yourself to be governed by these experts. And the experts are not the politicians. The civil service bureaucracies are far more important. And they have heads of different departments in civil service in every country. they have their long term, they have their whole life career there, basically. They know what's going on and they know what they're about, basically, and how the system works. Whereas with politicians, they have what's called musical chairs. If they screw up in one department, again, putting it as the head of it, basically, they move them to another department. And of course, then they ask the top civil servant to issue them with things to say and read and tell the public. That's how it's done. So really, the civil service is awfully important, as every government knows. And today, of course, they simply don't want you involved in the knowing, or certainly not the debating, of any up-and-coming big agendas. And everything really today is one big global agenda. It really is. It truly is. It's so comical to read the guff they give you for news, and you're supposed to believe it. It truly is the biggest drama. I don't know if it's good soaps or not good soaps. I never watched soaps. I couldn't stand them. But it's halfway okay, for soaps, I suppose, because that's what you're getting. That's all you're getting. In Britain, what they had them on suspense for, as we've seen in Britain, you're in suspenders for about 2 years, that's what they're waiting for, this Brexit thing. And is May going to pull you out? She's not going to pull you out. They're going to do that clause 50 or whatever, article 50, and keep you in, yada yada yada. And they played it all awfully well, just dragging on. Because if they keep going with the article, I think it's article 50, then you find that Brussels has the right to tell them the terms, you see, which would not be nice. But if you just toss it out and say, we're going this way, and that's it, then Brussels has to come to them, and then Britain was going to make that. That's how they play it to the public, in a way. It's so interesting to see that Britain was one of the main countries, it's actually the main country initially to start off with, for a global world system, a government system for the whole planet through the Royal Institute for International Affairs. They boasted about it. It's on all their books, and they set up the secretive organization by recruiting people who become politicians in all parties at the heads of them to help, not just in Britain, but in all the British Commonwealth countries to bring this about. Then again, they turned a lot of it over to the US because Britain was broke after two world wars. They were intended eventually to bring in a world system because everybody was so sick of war, which made you sick of nations, you see. They used that as the excuse. If it wasn't for nations, you wouldn't have international war between nation states, as they call it. So the wars were awfully good, but they didn't get the global system. They did get out of it, though, the secretive arrangement for a united Europe, and out of it, too, they had the American Summit Group, and then the free trade negotiation that became the NAFTA, and it's now the new name, but it's the same organization exactly. Nothing's changed for the Americas. So that was all part of the old plan before they even had World War One. It's documented. It's not conspiracy stuff. It's all documented by the organizations themselves, and books put out to the top. Not just by Carol Quigley, but many members belonging to, say, the CFR in the US, for instance. And even for the Fortress America group that came out in Canada and States on behalf of the CFR by the head of the CFR at the time, that was Lloyd Axworthy, I think. And he had been the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada just before that. And they came out as the CFR talking about the need to integrate all of the Americas under one system. So we continue with it all, of course. And now they'll be using climate change and everything else you can dream up, bogus enemies, etc., to bring it all about, including the very old agenda, going all the way back, probably even before Thomas Malthus, to do with population reduction. And as they well know, of course, but facts don't matter, they well know that the more employment people have, with a decent wage, etc., and true enough, just like Charles Galton Darwin has said, they can be enticed to have a motor car, he says, as opposed to having children. So in other words, the materialistic benefits will make them not want to have so many children. And that has been awfully successful, as we know, in the West, and coupled with the mass promiscuity agenda. The more you stay single and have lots of sexual partners, then the less likely you are to have a permanent one and nor want children. So that's been awfully successful, too. This is all by design. I hope people understand that. It didn't happen by itself, because instinct is very, very strong. You're born with these instincts. And, of course, the mating instinct is what preserved humanity. If you don't live in a tribe where the whole tribe looks after the children, then, and the Western countries certainly it didn't to that extent, even within tribes there's odd families, because the whole tribe can't afford, in a money system, you can't afford to take care of the children. So it's up to the individuals who have the children to take care of themselves. So that's what the family always was for. But in the welfare system and in the socialist system, the idea was to wean it off that. They'd actually said that in all the writings at the top, that if they could just, in psychology, if they could just train the public to have sex and not to have bonding. The bonding is what, that's our main enemy. And so the more sexual partners you have, and the more it's promoted in a sexual cultural, meaning entertainment system, then the less chances that you have of permanent bonding. And even if there's something there to begin with in a couple, if you're watching television, you're going to be awfully, awfully unhappy with it. It doesn't matter who your partner is after a while, because it's meant to make you dissatisfied. In fact, everything on television with commercials is meant to make you dissatisfied with everything you presently have. That's the whole point of commercials. So you get that particular thing that's missing in your life. Obviously, it's that chewing gum or whatever it is, and your whole life's going to be just hunky-dory. So you've got to be unsatisfied or dissatisfied with whatever you have at the time. And that's how simply it is to work. It works awfully well. So as I say, the targets are obvious. It's been very successful. And then the promotion of single-parent families and housing too. I think Tony Blair really revamped all of that because they wanted to encourage women to have just children if they wanted children, but don't have husbands. And there's even articles out now, in fact. Again, the same articles by an expert here and an expert there, who've always got books out, of course, telling you that single women are much happier and live longer than married women. And of course, they don't give the statistics to show it. But then that's how it's done, isn't it? Who needs real, true, checkable facts when you're promoting an agenda? Everything's like that, isn't it? It's like the spraying in the skies. You're not supposed to ever notice it. And even had all these... Whenever you find anything to do with scientific fact, an observational fact, like when in 1998 in Canada, when they really, in Ontario at least, they were side spraying the skies daily. And it was so obvious. And they were much, much, much lower when they were doing the crisscrossing back then too. It was like walking into a sci-fi movie at the time. That's what it was like. It truly was. It was perfect, perfect checkerboard pattern. But so much lower. Wide trails because it's low. And you weren't supposed to notice. And most folk, and it surprised me. I talked to a few folk that day and pointed out. And said, oh, yeah. But they won't take anything as startling. Unless, because they really do think, as Zygmunt Brzezinski said, that the media and the news is there to do the reasoning for them. And if you're not told to beware of something or to be on the alert or look out for something, then obviously it's not very important. That's how simple it is to do outrageous things in the public, and they're completely oblivious of it. It should have freaked them all out. Something in your environment changes instantly like that. You've never seen it before. It wasn't a few trails. It was literally from horizon to horizon. These big, thick... I mean, when you put your arm up in front of you, these trails were so low, they're as thick as your forearm. If as your forearm would be from your eyes. And it was freakish. It really was. And it was the same time too, the same year when they brought in what they called downbursts. This new term, downbursts. You might see that downbursts are happening, and these sudden blasts coming down from the sky, and even doing straight lines through forests, absolutely straight lines like a highway through forests and things like that. All brand new phenomena, and they said that it took the upper part of a building off outside Toronto. It was the sudden downbursts. But get used to the terms again. Then you had noctilucent clouds floating across the sky at night, glowing and red and yellow and all this kind of stuff. And then, people saw that hundreds of years ago, says old Indian legend. I mean, they come out with this stuff as they're doing new stuff, obviously, all the time, and superheating the atmosphere. Then you had the HAARP project out, and that was the first time they admitted that they had it in Alaska, but now they've had them all over the place now. And they could even use whole arrays of them, individual arrays, across miles and miles, even across the country, that work in unison occasionally, and they can triangulate where they're projecting the power source, the superheating atmosphere, and then cause amazing changes in the weather and atmosphere, and amazing things they can cause, for sure. And a lot of universities have their mini HAARPs, all parts of this huge array system that they have. So we live in a scientific age of scientific supremacy, they say. Whatever you're looking at, you have an expert telling you what to do, like Bertrand Russell said. He says, well, train them. He says that until women can't, or anybody, couldn't change a diaper on a child without expert advice and to be shown how to do it. That's come to pass now. We now also have bioethicists. I did a show years ago on that, when they first gave it to the public, and they launched them on television, and there's across all the newspapers. Oh, this so-and-so says, this bioethicist has declared. These people who are only human beings like you and I are given special abilities, special insights on what ethics are, as we start creating laws on what's ethical and what's not ethical, to do with us, including our bodies, and to our bodies, in fact. See? And now, of course, they're deciding if you live, die, or whatever for your organs in hospitals, and it's going to get a lot worse. But you don't think for yourself, for goodness sake, because you've got bioethicists who've got it all in hand. Thank goodness they're there. And we can just sit and play and drool, I guess, while they're making all the decisions on what to do with our lives. How calmly we accept it all, eh? Because like Russell said, he said, train, the people won't be able to do anything without the advice of experts. And they've got them all out there. You've been trained with them. These weather stations, you know, these weather programs that they have on television, and weather stations and for television, 24 hours a day, horror stories. And they were designed to be horror stories. Until a little bit of drizzle was going to be a mass flood. And before that, of course, they started it with the weather people showing you the next day's weather. And it was, and they come out there dressed in oilskins, it was going to rain. Are we children or something? Is this how gradually you're trained into, you know? But this is how it's done. And they admit now, in books put out by people who were involved in the setting up of the Weather Channel and different ones to terrify you, that was the purpose of them, was to terrify the public. Because, you see, you won't go along with say, the big global agenda on sustainability unless you go along with this whole hype on weather change or weather modification, as I prefer to call it. Because what's normal weather today when they are geoengineering the skies? Hmm? Are the effects of what you're seeing the effects of the geoengineering? Of course they are. You can't have honest tests or statistics today when you've got daily geoengineering going on, and it has been going on for years now. And remember that the top report said, as I said, if we ever had to geoengineer, this is years ago, I keep all this stuff, they said from their main meetings in the US at the time, they said, if we were to do this, you couldn't just stop it once we've started it. He said, because once we've altered the climate by geoengineering, if you were to stop doing it, you'd have incredible catastrophic events happening when you suddenly stop it. Because you see, the whole point is also to alter the jet patterns of the airstreams, the currents, the normal flows, and divert them elsewhere. That way you can divert moisture into one place and heat to another, etc. And you get dry in one place, wet in another, and reverse it when they want to. It's literally child's play today by superheating certain parts of the atmosphere. And so it's all happening. And therefore, are we going into the geoengineering, still going into the geoengineering? They said it might take 20, 30 years to get enough of the particulates to inject into the stratosphere, the particles. It might take 20 to 30 years to get a loading dose up there that would stay there for 100 years. So are we still going into that phase, which is making the incredible things happen already, or are we coming out of it? See, they won't tell you anything, because it's all secretive. You're still supposed to think that they're still debating whether to do it or not, even though they admit they have been doing it in other papers at universities. It's a sad thing in this world where people truly tout what they think is fact, that they're free in a democracy, when you run in a pretty well absolute secrecy. In fact, you run as children. Don't frighten the children by telling them unpleasant things of what we're going to do. They might not like it, so they might stop us by protesting. So just don't tell them anything. And that's what it is. Meanwhile, you can get the bus dimensions of some movie star every day there, and you probably see the bust, in fact. But the fact that this is not news, the real news that you're not going to get. And what you are getting is a kind of downplayed version of what they're already doing. It's sad but true, isn't it? We know this. We know this. And then you go into, and how quick people forget things too. You're so overloaded with data and bits and bytes and dribbles every day from all sources, and you won't remember much of it at all. That's why they overload you with it, especially the 99% of it is irrelevant data. It truly is irrelevant. And the stuff that you should remember, or you'd hopefully remember, is put across in all this stuff, a needle in a haystack, so that you pretty well have been legally informed, but you won't remember consciously. Or if you do, you say, I kind of vaguely remember. And that's how it's done. So the pretense of democracy can be kept going along. Now I'll put up a link from a few years ago, actually, to do with climate geoengineering governance, a research project from UK. And it's from Geoengineering Governance Research. And you can have a good read at that too. It's got a lot of links. There's even stuff up on YouTube from big world meetings and things like that. If you aren't interested, most folk aren't interested in these things because they're trained out of really caring. They've been trained to believe they're being governed well, and these special invisible people above who are just so incredibly and brilliant, you see, are managing you all, and it's your place to be down below and just play and enjoy yourself and watch the movies and stuff like that, you know, party. And that's how you're trained, isn't it? And they have world agendas to do with well-being. And I've mentioned some of them before, because you see, under austerity programs, and that's what they are, for sustainability, you're being trained. It doesn't matter if you don't have much of what you think you want. If they can reshape what you really should have and make you want that instead, to be happy with it, then your well-being goes up, and it's going to be all nicey-nicey good then, you see. There. And that's how it's done. And I've read these articles too. They have world meetings under the UN and different organizations all working on them. But I'll put some of these things up perhaps tonight. Because as I say, you should just be happy, you know, like that silly, silly, dumb song, "Don't Worry, Be Happy." Huh? If you can't eat, or you know people around you, or even yourself, if you're addicted to drugs that are just flooding the countries now, on cue, mind you, and being allowed to, and there's folk dying all over the place, and you can't have your brain goes on them right away, you know, you're completely dysfunctional, and you're going to stay that way till maybe you die or get off them, if you can. But I think it's make you be happy. Be happy with what you've got. You might be living on the streets, but hey, what's wrong with living on the streets if you're just happy? And of course, they even have articles about taking the drugs to make you happy. As long as you're happy, that's the fine line. Don't forget what the whole Freudian thing's about. That being well meant you were in a state of happiness, which is nonsense. What does it mean by happiness? That there's different degrees of contentment, you see, and stability for the day. And in between phases, there's times too you must be a bit depressed, because depression can goad you into doing something better for yourself, perhaps, you see. Or depression might say you procrastinate on this long enough, do something about it, things like that. So these are natural things, but no, they want you to be happy all the time, just like the ads on TV, you know, the dumb ads that you get all the time. Just smile and grin and be happy, you see. And if you can't have a good smile and you can't afford a dentist these days because it's so incredibly extortionate, then be happy with the mouthful of teeth or broken teeth that you have, you see. Just be, if you're happy, who cares, you see. There you go. There's the answer. That's the Freudian thing. The Freudian whole idea was that the system, as he destroyed religion under science, you see, taken over as your new master, then there'd be so much unhappiness and depression. So psychiatrists would step in and take the place of the priests. And therefore, all the people who went to priests for advice or help or whatever, or even confession, could then go to the psychiatrist and pay them big money to confess all these things. And then they could put you on pills, right? Maybe for life, and make even further profits from that too. Isn't that wonderful? Chemical happiness doesn't last long. But again, I'm going off the topic here. I wasn't even going to talk about this tonight. I just wondered about how folk are perceiving this new reality they're in. Have they adapted quickly into it with the nonsensical, a million photographs per newspaper, but no real stories, and definitely not stories that matter? And are they adapting to the fact they've been told very little? At one time, people would demand that at least the politicians would put a show on television and give different statements about different things they were up to. They don't even bother with it anymore. All you get is the scandals and the PR shots of them, you know, like wrestlers just bad-mouthing their opponents. It's all an act, of course, just like the wrestling thing. It's a big act. But that's what they've given you for reality now, isn't it? Because, you see, the agenda is so entrenched that no one can get off this progressive agenda. It's written in stone. It's not happenstance. None of it's happened. It all merges together towards a particular world society that they're creating with a vastly reduced population. And what you're living through now are really the early stages of it. They've got a lot to do yet, but they've got all the technologies to make it happen. Right down to their advanced projections for the military on population declines around 2030, a sudden drop. They don't tell you why it's a sudden drop, but they know exactly when the up and coming youngsters will hit a certain age and for procreation, and there'll be a sudden, even further, massive decline in fertility. That's part of it, you see. Don't forget, even with the basic studies they did on soya, with the soya bean and all that, it was heavily modified and heavily toxic too, with particular herbicides that they created at the time years ago. And the studies that came out, the official studies that came out on them, when they said that the ones who ate it, the test rats, etc., could develop to stomach or colon problems and decreased fertility, but the offspring would have twice as much increased sterility, and the next generation were almost completely sterile. You see how your genes are altered step by step. This is a big, big breakthrough for them too, because you see, when you went to biowarfare and you studied the terrible things we were working on during World War II, they looked at different programs for extended warfare on different, like, might last 20, 30, 40, 50 years, or almost a permanent state of warfare like they was envisaged in George Orwell's 1984, you see. Well, how do you, over a long period of time, win that war, a protracted war? Well, you make sure that you must get to the young, fertile group who are even babies, because eventually they're going to grow up and produce more children, you see. This is widely discussed in all military colleges. Even today, it's standard stuff. And some of the conflicts in Arabian countries or Arab countries, you'll see lots of documentation on how to bring them down over a long period of time by using different techniques. Of course, they don't tell you all the techniques they're going to use, because they probably will be using them on us all, actually. But it's quite fascinating to, when you see it all happening, after reading it from about years and years ago, when it's all happening across the planet, but mainly in the West, as we go down with fertility. Whenever you see things like that, and you get all the different, it's multifactorial. You've got plastics, of course. They made it popular to drink bottled water. Why do you think that was? Until you can't see an ad or even things in the movies without the main characters drinking from bottled water, these soft plastic, the worst kind you can get, for bisphenols, which are awfully good at causing reduced sperm in the male, for sure, and many other hormonal factors in male and female, hormone disruptors and mimickers too. Then you get this one here too, eh? A recent study that tested both men and dogs added to concerns. I guess that's how we're lumped now. If you're men, you're given to a dog, but both men and dogs added to concerns that chemicals, and it's true enough, eh? We're the most hated species at the moment, that chemicals in the environment are damaging the quality and quantity of sperm. It says here, surprising new research into dog sperm has reproductive biologists concerned about the fate of their own species. So the dogs are afraid of the fate of their own species, I guess, the way they worded it here. Anyway, it says, in a marked study, scientists at Nottingham University found that two chemicals common in home environments damage the quality of sperm in both men and dogs. The culprits implicated are diethyl hexyl phthalates, used to make new plastics more pliable, and polychlorinated biphenyl, 153, found in older plastics and electrical equipment. Companies stopped producing the PCBs in the late 1970s due to their health risks, including a possible increased risk of cancer, hormone disruption, liver damage, and behavioural or cognitive deficits in children exposed to chemicals in utero. That's a big one too. But the chemical persists in the environment. So another study out too, this one from Nottingham, without the sheriff, of course, but it says the study is just one in a mountain pile of research indicating that the quality and quantity of male sperm is on the decline. Well, it's been on the decline since about the 70s. Steadily, but this is a further bang again. It's just that sperm counts have dropped by half in the last 50 years, and a higher percentage are poor swimmers. That's you know, they're immortal, basically. Slow, ungainly, or beset by genetic flaws. The ones that persist are flawed now, the sperm. And then it says that the exact cause of that decline is not well understood. What a nonsense, eh? All these things happened after world meetings. There was a world meeting, remember, basically during the end of World War II. I think the war was still going on, and King George was supposedly the head of it, the titular head of it, at least, for the meeting, and all the top Royal Society scientists and that, and the relevant groupings got together and talked about but they haven't killed enough people off for this war, you know, so, especially eligible young men, and therefore they'd have to do something about a future population explosion, etc., etc. So they came up with an idea, even the psychological stuff too, and repetition. Oh my God, the baby boomers, like a curse on the planet, baby boomers. They've never had people having babies before. See? So they went to work, of course. They didn't sit back. And then, so after that, about not even 20, 30 years later, you've got the sperm count in half just by accident. But, you know, it's happened by itself, I suppose. And folk will accept it as that too. There's always a cause for everything. Always, folks. It doesn't just happen by itself. It doesn't happen. If you get up in the morning and your left leg doesn't want to follow your body, there's a cause for it. If you just accept it as some new normal, then good luck, you know. But it's the same with everything that happens. There's always a cause for it. And the problem is today we're getting taught just to accept things. Just be happy. Be happy. You can still have intercourse, maybe, you see, with chemical aids and stuff. But the fact is, you won't produce children. And if you do, there's ways you can get rid of that problem too. The folk just don't get it, eh? They really don't get it. That the big authorities out there that are managing the population count and all the rest of it don't give a darn about you. They really don't. They've got other agendas to fulfill. Really. Anyway, so sperm count is on the decline. And the exact cause of decline is not well understood, you see. One culprit may be increasingly unhealthy lifestyles. Not sure, sure. The same factors that affect general health and so on. And they always go obesity, smoking and stress, alcohol, and blah, blah, blah. But they say many researchers also suspect chemical residues in the environment may be partly to blame. Well, if you look at what's in the stuff that you're eating, pesticides and herbicides and all other kind of things too, then perhaps they've got something to do with it too, folks, eh? What do you think? But anyway, the motility, the ability for your sperm to actually swim, is definitely damaged. It's much, much lower. And you can see all under the microscope. Lots of university studies and all of that. So there you go. But also I want to go into this, and it's to do with the well-being budget, right? New Zealand's got one too. They've all got them. See, it just happened, again, from a central agency for the world system and the United Nations. And I read the articles when they first came out with this well-being. Never mind about stopping, you know, eliminating the poverty problem and all that. Just feel well. Feel. Don't increase salaries and wages and for living standards. No, just make you feel well with where you are. See? So New Zealand's world first well-being budget is to focus on poverty and mental health. See? So it claims to be the first to measure success by people's well-being. There you are. So child poverty, domestic violence, and mental health will be the priorities in New Zealand's well-being budget. Yeah, so they have well-being budgets now. The finance minister, they're destroying all cultures. They're destroying traditional systems and families and everything else and work. I mean, it's all been given over to third world countries, all the industry. They employed millions and millions and millions of people across the world. But it's all stuck in the same areas now. And folk, they seem to have no purpose. Their religions have been stripped off them and getting hammered and chipped away, which gave them at least something to turn to rather than going to psychiatrists. God help you, go to a psychiatrist. Or these agencies that governments are just churning out, that the new scientists are going to manage your minds for you. Just hand it over. But people have nothing to believe in now, you see. As I say, if you want, how can you go to humanity for help when it's humanity at the top, the strata of scientific tyranny that's destroying you all, and bureaucracy and politics? You need something beyond that. And actually, whoever man puts out when he puts himself as God to manage everything ends in disaster. Hell on earth. That's what comes out. For the majority of the public, hell on earth. Absolutely. And it's only in the first stage of this, which it gets really rolling, folks. Into real austerity. And another one too is personal well-being. Yeah. Rather than economic growth, should be the primary aim of government spending. The tax ever off you, and the cheek to turn, not give anything back for it, just come back and say, just be happy with your state of living. Eh? Well, they can be happy, these politicians and so on, because they're all living off of us. And they live awfully. These servants live way above the masters, don't they? Topsy-turvy world. Another article too, the essence of evil, sex with children has become big business in America. Because that's the next hurdle, is what they call intergenerational sexual relations. And step by step, they said they would get to this phase, and here they are now. And children as young as young girls, some as young as 9, are being bought and sold for sex in America. And the average age for a young woman being sold for sex is now 13 years old. Isn't that just, it's progressive, eh? And it says sex trafficking, especially when it comes to the buying and selling of young girls, has become big business, the fastest growing business in organized crime, and the second most lucrative commodity traded illegally after drugs and guns. And I mean, look at the state of society, eh? I know people in London who walk around with bulletproof vests on now. It's so dangerous there. And now they're bringing out special ones to deal with just knives, because they're folk getting stabbed in different places. It's pretty common now. This is progress, they call it. Really? Okay. Excuse me if I don't agree with you. So I'll put these links up. And then there's another. And here's the answer to the, remember all the grooming of the children and stuff in Britain and elsewhere in Europe, and you know, you're not supposed to talk about it now. And it's true, isn't it? And the government's told the cops to lay off the grooming gangs, etc., in Britain for years. Thousands of people have been destroyed forever, these children. So they get the unions to go forward, under a supposedly good cause, you say, without thinking it through where it's supposed to go. Decriminalise sex work to protect us from crime, prostitutes say. And the English collective says laws forcing women to work alone expose them to violence. Well, you know, that's where prostitution always goes. So you got an English collective of prostitutes. I already last week put up some stuff from areas in England that were officially the trial areas for legal prostitution. And they're still falling down dead with, you know, syringes stuck in their arms and stuff, and they get disease and alcohol, and they're dying, of course. And then they're fighting each other for their area, for their, you know. But anyway, this one up here too says it'd be better just to make it all legal. Then all those really amazing. You see what's going to go if they make it legal, and the next step is let's legalize young children, right? From the previous article, let's just legalize that and make children that are precocious, you know, they know what it's all about, and make it legal for them to have sex too. And then they have government pimps managing them. See, why not? If your government's already the pimp or your drug pusher, your government now, then why not just, do you understand what's happening here? And this is not happens. It's not stupidity either. This is an agenda. And then they bring in the nurses in Britain, right? Royal College of Nurses, the union and all that, vote to back decriminalisation of prostitution. So there you go. Get them on the act as well. But they don't think it all the way through, do they? They really don't. They really, really don't. They don't think where it's all meant to go. And that's the beauty of collective organisation. Bernays said that. If you want to, you know, he said to the big marketers, don't go door to door trying to get people to back whether you're selling them or changes or whatever it happens to be. Go to the heads of organizations, including ministers and priests or whatever, and get them on board with you. And we saw that all that happening. It happens all the time. They're all on board with the green agenda and the eco this and eco that. And before you know it, they're all pushing for having less children. I mean, it's beautiful how it works, isn't it? Bring your flocks to us, you see. So here's the case of the College of Nurses. And they really don't see where it's going to go. It's already hell, but it's going to be a worse hell once you legalize all this stuff. And then you get all the different, the real grooming gangs in action and stuff. And they'll get their licenses to operate. And there you go. And prostitution is seen as a leisure activity tackling Spain's sex traffickers. There you go. Big business, etc. In this day and age, he surprises big business. It's astonishing. And last week, too, I mentioned about the things that are happening now with organs, you know, and being an organ donor, and how really it's amazing business. It's amazing, and how they can con everybody into getting their, you know, their organs, and the dangers of all this, where it's all meant to go, of course. And is it, will you even get treated in hospital, or are they going to bring you back into on your feet and get you walking, or are you more lucrative to them for your body parts? You better start thinking. Don't think for a second that this won't happen. I mean, corruption doesn't stop at the street level. It's worse way above that. Look at the governments. The Baltimore Sun, it says, overdose deaths largely from heroin and powerful prescription painkillers such as fentanyl reached record highs across the country. Maryland had one of the biggest surges in the country with 1,259 fatal overdoses last year, twice the number in 2010. So there's progress for you. And so nationally, organ donations from those who overdose or injected drugs are the fourth largest donor group, according to the data from the United Network for Organ Sharing. That's organ sharing. It's not ghouls, it's organ sharing, which coordinates donations. It's big business, eh? Drug overdoses eclipsed homicide victims years ago. And the overdoses rank behind people who died of natural causes. It says the largest group of donors, as well as car crash victims and those who committed suicide. Car crash donors have declined as auto safety improved. It's actually getting worse again, auto safety, because they've legalized other things and their mind certainly isn't on the road now. But anyway, you understand, we are the business. I've said it so many times. We are the business. And we're also the product at the end of all. We buy it all, and then they make money off us when we're about to die. Remember, they want to keep you alive as they take your organs out of you. I hope you understand that. They don't want death or organ death. They want to keep you alive and harvest the organ. The last one out is the heart, to keep you going, as they basically cannibalize everything else. When the people who go there to receive the organs, so the different surgeons are sent in, they're flown in by jet. Big business, as I say. There's ones that take the kidney specialists, ones with the liver and heart and lungs and so on. And the person in charge of it is the heart and lung specialist, because you keep that going until all the ones are taken out and straight into the freeze, you see, for preservation. And then basically they have the job of causing the real death by cutting off, and that's it. Now goes the heart and lungs, that's it. That's how it's done, for those who don't know. It's big, big business. And then to persuade the public to offer nice causes, you see. Do you think that's all going to nice causes? Do you really think that? I mean, how many folk are getting transplants a day, even in your own country, compared to how many folk are being cannibalized in your own country every day? Anyway, as death tolls rise, opioid crisis makes more organs available for transplant. This is where it's going, you see. And then it gives you a story there of her son lay dying and this poor woman and so on. Very, very emotional. A nurse who works with people with chronic kidney disease, blah, blah, knew the impact of such donations as well. And so they give you something that's very heart-wrenching, etc. But of course, the whole thing is, it's good that even though the guy dies, his death's not in vain, you see. This is where it's going. And tragic as I say, but really, when you book in Ontario to a hospital or you're taken into a hospital, you're automatically put down as a donor unless you opt out. They don't tell you at the time. That was in the papers, though, a few years ago. And they even have professional persuaders that are jetted across the country to hospitals. Just men and women, it seems kind of ordinary men and women who come in, they're often nice and they're trained to reach worried or grieving parents who are in hospital, who are in there for someone on artificial life support or whatever it happens to be, to try and convince them to sign them over for organ parts. I mean, you understand, this isn't more humanity, I think. I see it as, we're just products, and we're worth an awful lot. These folk won't be doing the jetting across for nothing, persuading folk, remember, they're getting paid awfully well. So, and of course, it also tells me that they must understand what the different antidotes to these different drugs can be, and they must have awfully fast ways, I would think, of determining if there's actual other diseases present, very quick, like almost instant, to even bother to take organs, etc. If they're taking them from, say, car accidents, and so on. Now, DARPA is that's the big testing and research organization. So the ARPA, but they call it just ARPA, that's the part that gave you the computer. They developed it during the Cold War, supposedly to interact with the Soviet system. So they had their war games going on through computers back then. And then they gave us the computer to get us all into it, because the agenda was to literally alter the world and spy on all of us and manage and control all of us, of course. And it was DARPA. And it says the U.S. Department of Defense is close to expanding its leisurely future warfare and technology agency called DARPA by combining it with the Pentagon Office in charge of adapting existing weapons to new uses. And people familiar with the plans said, so the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, that's the name of it, you see the full name, would absorb the Strategic Capabilities Offices and centralize more research units under the Pentagon's Chief Technology Officer, Michael Griffin. Now, in the past, they put a wonderful story. We created a chip that can implant in paraplegics, and they can actually type on a computer, which is just with their thought. So, see, you understand that this warfare outfit puts all these wonderful things out to help people, because you know that peacekeepers today are warriors. You know, dressed like warriors, have always been with grenades and weapons and so on. Right? But they become peacekeepers, and DARPA, this wonderful organization. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, they give you all your advanced warfare stuff, is there to help paraplegics and stuff. And you see, you've got it all wrong. You keep thinking bad things. You must be paranoid, thinking they're there to actually do warfare kind of stuff on the world, you know? Get with the program here. So the combination would end an experiment with SEO that began as an attempt to adapt a future to future threats quickly with less bureaucracy, it says here. Then they give, so anyways, it says all of SEO is the part there. $1.3 billion 2020 budget requests were transferred to DARPA, and DARPA would gain control over 37% more funding on top of its 2020 funding request of $3.5 billion. It's charged with developing unexpected and game-changing capabilities to counter emerging threats. And it's looked into projects like swarming small drones and transforming the Raytheon COMED Standard Missile 6, a defensive weapon, into an offensive weapon. Wow. There you go. You can imagine that when you've got all these folk who've got the chips, because they want to give you chips for everything, and I tell you how to make it so wonderful to have chips in you. So eventually you probably won't get medicine as such, or you'll get a medical chip implant that will fix everything for you, you see. And you can imagine that one night you're all lying in bed, just like a horror movie, maybe make a horror movie, you're all lying in bed, and then DARPA activates the chip, and then millions of folk from across the country just get up in the middle of the night from asleep there and walk like zombies, you see. Chipped zombies into the. You do stacks of movies on that, because what they've done on everything else, haven't they? Anyway, I'll put this article up too, and then this one here. DARPA wants to wirelessly connect human brains to machines, allowing soldiers to fully control weapon systems and view things remotely like a three-eyed raven. Wow. Or feel stuff remotely. It says it's a stuff of science fiction, but scientists have already made some advances in the field. The first human neuroprosthetic devices appeared in the mid-1990s. That's when they put out the PR stuff on the chips, allowing patients to truly control artificial limbs, but those required surgical interventions. More experiments during the early 2010s showed that scientists could reconstruct people's vision into digital video, but that's far from being real time. And most recently, scientists at Carnegie Mellon University have figured out how to connect two brains using a machine to transfer information wirelessly. So two heads are better than one, see? There you are. Now, they want to help you, understand? And it gives you a different universities are in the programs. They always use our tax money for everything, don't they? This article here is pretty good. It's about UN hysteria linking climate change and species extinction mindlessly parroted by the media. A little history of it. But a lot of it I read years ago on other websites to do with the predictions to terrify the public, including the quotes from the leaders of these different ecological organizations and NGOs and heads of them at the United Nations too, when they admitted blatantly, we always give them scary scenarios to terrify them, otherwise they won't listen to us, you see. And they're still doing it, of course. So it's truly said that UN reports on the climate extinctions are printed throughout the media to push the agenda and scare the public, especially the children, with no questions asked and no attempt to verify information and reports. So this article here goes into you always see 1 million species are threatened with extinction because of the humans, and then Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, a United Nations committee whose report was written by 145 experts, see, experts from 50 countries, talking about tens of thousands are already dead, blah, 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 and they give you the numbers from like decades ago. And none of us should be here by now, because even in the 90s they said we wouldn't hit 2000. Actually, they said we wouldn't hit 1990 initially. We'd all starve to death, you see. And here we all are. And all the other scary scenarios too. And they're still at it. And then Prince Charles came out years ago and said, we've got 100 odd days to live if we don't change it right now, you see, the way we live. And of course that came and went, and the royalty's still getting married and having children and so on. It says, UN predicts disaster if global warming's not checked. 1989, senior UN environment official says, entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels. That's why I bought a snorkel, a big long snorkel, just in case. If the global warming trend is not reversed by the year 2000, coastal flooding, crop failures, eco-refugees would happen, blah, blah, blah. That was from the United Nations Environmental Programme. Oh, terrifying scenarios, eh? And then they said there are 3 trillion trees on the earth, yeah, but they're disappearing fast. It's interesting, they keep giving you different studies, but obviously they've got people going around counting them all, right? A study led by the Yale University researchers found that there are over 3 trillion trees on Earth, but they're disappearing at an alarming rate. It found there are around 3.04 trillion trees on Earth, around 422 for each person on the planet. The number is a huge increase in the previous global estimate, which was just over 400 billion trees, see? And that's, they played that one up before too. Oh, there's 400 billion trees in the planet. Now it's 3 trillion. It's getting more than few, rather than fewer. So we've been told that humans and CO2 are killing oceans. So now they only estimate there are 3.5 trillion left. That's what they're saying, right? That seems to be an odd definition of dying. Mm-hmm. I'd say so. There you are. And how many fish live in the ocean? According to the best estimates of the scientists, it gives you 3.5 trillion fish currently living in the ocean. I guess there's someone go around counting them all. And it says, then there were all those looming disasters projected by scientists on the first Earth Day almost 50 years ago. That's what it was created for the Earth Day, right? A quick summary, we would all be dead by 1985 to the year 2000. And it says, we would be out of food by 1970 or 1980s. And during the 1980s, 4 billion people would die, including 65 million in the US. And by 1980, urban dwellers would have to wear gas masks to survive. And soon none of our land would be usable because of too much nitrogen. And the rivers would be out of oxygen, and freshwater fish would all be gone. Oh my God, the sky's falling, eh? And by 1995, 75% to 80% of species would be gone. And back then, but mind you, the first bit out of an ice age, they'd banked on a coming ice age to terrify us all, to give up all our rights, so the experts could manage us, you see, for depopulation and austerity and all. But it didn't work out, so then turned to global warming. And now they just settle on climate change because they try to cover all the bases. And this was the worst winter I've seen up here since I've been here. This winter passed. Anyway, it lasted over half the year before the snow was gone. And we're going to have an ice age where the Earth would be 4 degrees cooler by 1990 and 11 degrees colder by 2000. That was initial, some point the coming ice age. But this article is just full of all the quotes from all the different associations and organizations to terrify you, including, of course, naturally, Paul Ehrlich, you know, who gave you the population bomb, because that's a real agenda, is to depopulate the planet. How do you do it? Well, terrify them, and you can have all these children who are just consuming and creating pollution, you see. There you go. And it's interesting, I mean, Paul Ehrlich and his wife was on the board, actual board of the Club of Rome, eh? They came out with the agenda, terrify the public, because it's only to do it to give them scary scenarios, etc. And man would be the enemy of the planet, and that would fit the bill. Well, that's what they came up with. Never change. Big agenda, global agenda, and all the world's elite are in on it, folks. Yes, they are. The big club is in on it. And you're the cause of all the problems, apparently. You see? And they're not going to change it just for you, little old you. You might think you're important, but they don't. But it's just astonishing, isn't it, that the nonsense we get fed, the nonsense we get fed for a big, big agenda, a big global agenda. Hmm? Another one here, too, is 1 million species threatened with extinction because of humans. But not 1 million in one minute, 1 million, exactly. 1 million planets, 8 million species. It's astonishing. Everything's like, I used to, when you come to the States or Canada, you'd find towns. And you'd always find an even number. Everyone ended up with OO or whatever for the population on a signpost going into a place. I said, my God, there's this population planning for you. Well, here they are, you see, with 1 million species. 1 million exactly, threatened with extinction because of humans. And it says here that the global rate of species extinction is already tens to hundreds of times higher than it has been on average over the last 10 million years. This is the oldest counter we've ever had, this guy that counted them all. According to the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. Here's a mouthful for you. See, that's very important with a big long one like that, eh? I'm impressed, aren't you? A UN committee whose report was written by 145 experts from 50 countries. Mm-mm, there you go. Species extinction. And the actual number of species and endangered species appears to be 3,000. So why are we told that 1 million are endangered? But when you go into it, there's only 3,000, it says. And even then, that's iffy. So endangered species, once they're gone, there's no bringing them back. Currently, more than 3,000 species of animals are considered endangered in the United States. Well, what happened to that 1 million, eh? What is it here? You see what I'm saying? And their own policies, they tell you one thing, but you wanted to go and look, it's only 3,000. And even that's iffy. It says the US, the Endangered Species Act was passed in 1973 to help with conservation efforts, but there are now three times as many endangered species as there were just 10 years ago. If you look at the number of species that have gone extinct since the last almost 120 years, they say it's 477, or around four a year. And this author says, I'm sure most of those started going extinct long before fossil fuels could have caused the problem. So four species per year, and the UN puts out the prediction of 1 million, and journalists like puppets just print this as fact, really. It says 10 animals have gone extinct in the last 100 years. Nearly 500 species have gone extinct in the last century, and in most cases we humans are to blame, according to a 2050 study by the National Autonomous University called UNAM. It says 477 species have disappeared since 1900 due to degradation and destruction of their natural habitats. The researchers said it was the largest mass extinction of species in history. In 1989, the UN predicted disaster, and we only had 10 years left to fix the problem. They were 100% wrong, but journalists and other Democrats pushing the agenda, it's also Republicans, they're all on board with it, take trillions away from the public, and they don't care. And of course, the money goes elsewhere. And then UN predicts disaster if global warming is not checked. And that was June 29, 1989. A senior UN environmental official says entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the global warming trend is not reversed by the year 2000. And coastal flooding, crop failures, the same stuff they just keep recycling, you see. And eco-refugees would be caused and threatening political chaos, and said Noel Brown, director of the New York office, blah, blah, blah. So that's what they hope to do for, and actually Rockefeller's also had articles out on the eco-refugees could happen, but they changed their minds eventually and say it's better just to have economic refugees, as they call it today, just mass migration, to where the best money is, basically, even if they can't get work for the folk there. It says, governments have a 10-year window of opportunity to solve the greenhouse effect before it goes beyond human control, as they spray the skies and cause global dimming, eh? According to all the satellite organizations and NASA, etc. Global dimming, they say. Spring away. And they talk about greenhouse gas. Most of the greenhouse gas, they call it, is actually water moisture. And the carbon dioxide is a 0.0000 something. It's a trace gas. But that doesn't, facts don't matter, eh? Then Yale University estimated there were 3 trillion trees on the earth. Ah, there you go. And previous estimates are 400 billion. So, there you go. And how many fish in the ocean? Again, I've done that one already. And we'll be out of food either by 1970s or 1980s. Oh, there you go. This was 18 spectacularly wrong apocalyptic predictions made around the time of the first Earth Day in 1970. Expect more this year. And that's what they do every year. They actually say that they get together to give you scary scenarios. There you go. Facts don't matter, you see. It's only if you believe what they're telling you to create. You see, you won't budge. One of my talks in the 90s, I said it's like we're like cattle. They talk about we're cattle, you see, to them. And if we're content in a field with grass, we graze. We like to graze, and why not, you know? and as your pals are about, you're grazing at the same time, and you're quite content. But you see, to get change going, or even get you moved in their field, they've got to stir you up to get you moving. It's not quite easy, so they get to scare you. It's easy to scare you. Like you see the cowboy in westerns, and they start shooting the guns in the air and hollering and so on, and trying to stampede them to get them moving. And they say that with all the courses on human behaviour, if you can get them terrified and hysterical, you get them moving in fear, and don't let them stop and relax. If you stop and relax and start chewing the cud again like the cattle, then you need to do it all over again. But once you've got them moving, don't give them a break. Just keep them moving, keep them terrified. And this is the agenda towards planned change. Step by step by step by step over so many years. And it's all still happening yet. It's worked awfully well. I mean, repetition is astonishing how well it works, isn't it? Repetition. And the folk just go on and on and on with it from 1,000 sources until they start spouting it themselves automatically. It's all understood in psychology, of course. But that's the world in which we live, eh? And all the stuff I mentioned tonight, it was nowhere about where I was going to talk about at all. But it just came out that way, because I realised that the stuff I was going to talk about would probably take me a couple of hours anyway, as I was prattling on there about the scary scenarios. But that's how we're managed, folks, and most folk haven't got a clue, because do you realise the basic cases we would be if you were trained at an early age into reality, that the people above you are not there to help you at all? It's like a horror movie. Like a whole pyramid of committees above you in organizations managing your brain and managing what they want you to believe in all the thousands of topics and programming you to make sure that you go along with all. So in other words, these people are not superior to you. They're not benefactors. They're a scientific tyranny, exactly as Lord Bertrand Russell said they would bring in. And he wrote that in his own book in the 1940s, I believe. He said that there will always be a tyranny. He says, we can bring in a tyranny. And at that time, he was talking about you had the Nazis of Germany in World War II that affected naturally everybody. And before that, and during the World War II, and afterwards, it never stopped, was communism, the Soviet communism, of course, and the Soviet bloc countries that came out of it. And then the Cold War, of course, that came out afterwards too. But there's all these mass movements. And they were really encouraged of how the Soviets, for instance, could manage many countries within the Soviet bloc and make them obedient. Mind you, they used terror techniques and everything else too to create a new type of humanity, an obedient society with as less kickback as possible. It was all big experiments, you see. And then they blended the two together, and everything was learned during the Soviet technique. The techniques were used today. They blended the two systems together, and that's what the Rees Commission came out with back in the 1950s in the United States. By Dodds, you know, Norman Dodds. The Rees Commission came out with all of that. They said they'd blend, eventually seamlessly, the Soviet system with the Western system, blend the two together, and that would be the new system. Well, that's where we are, folks. If you haven't figured it out, that's what happened. And that's, of course, was what the foundations that were owned by the the Rockefellers, remember, too, and the clique they belong to, own the banks, which are the U.S., Treasury, the national banks themselves, Banks of America. And they own the top industries too, was to grab all the big industries that folk would need to live in, which they did, and then create the big foundations and manage all the NGOs and education. You got a universal education or indoctrination, you should really call it, for obedient to global citizen. And that's what you got that too. It doesn't mean that it's factual, that what they teach you to believe is facts. It's only important that you believe it's a fact when you're brainwashed with it, because they're looking at you to see if it's worked on you or not. And if it's not worked on you, they're going to pull you in and, you know, tweak a few screws in your brain there to make sure it works properly. And properly to them means your indoctrination is moving and running you. They always talked about re-education camps in Soviet or communist countries. They still have them in communist countries. And they're very, very real. To bring you in, to make sure that you'll say the things you're supposed to say, and you will not say the things you're not supposed to say. We have it here now, as you've been trained and trained and trained on the use of vocabulary and certain words, which are going to be taboo. And then the words which are taboo then lead to topics that are taboo, until they gradually thin out all the things that are maybe obvious to you, as they introduce new things that are going to upset you, and then that'll be taboo as well. That's how it's managed. That's real neuroscience and psychology and behaviorism in action. You're a specimen of it today, folks. So for those who don't get freaked out with scary scenarios, and who understand it all, and who have kept their brains above water with big snorkel poles in case it gets flooding, I'm Alan Watt from Interior Canada, and it's good night, so may your God or your gods go with you.
You're listening to UCY.TV. Why don't you stick around for more awesome radio?